At Cool Air Products, we developed AC Smart Seal Quick Shot with professionals in mind. It's the only product on the market that's 3-in-1, with sealant, lubricant, and UV dye all in a single application. It's non-toxic, non-flammable, 100% safe to the touch, eco-friendly, and compatible with all refrigerants. It's a safe solution option, backed by years of R&D, Intertech tested, and has sealed millions of leaks. AC Smart Seal, the professional's choice.
What's up, guys? So we got Don Gillis on the podcast. He was formerly with Emerson, now with Chemours, in the same kind of role, like training, education. I'm on site here trying to get into some IT rooms for AC inspections. I'm having trouble with the card they gave me. So while I wait for that to be rectified, I'm getting the rest of this podcast done on site. So Don Gillis, we're going to talk about A2Ls. I know we've talked about it in the past, but the more education, the better. Let's get Don's perspective on this going forward. This is the HVAC Know-It-All Podcast. I'm your host, Gary McCready. This podcast is sponsored by Master. And like we've talked about in the past, they got that big yellow jacket wall with all the fittings and seals and all that. And if you have time on the off season here, guys, I know some of you do cooling and refrigeration all year long, but if you got time, it's a good idea to sit down and reseal up all your hoses, put new seals in them, and rebuild your gauges if you have to, because they got rebuilding kits as well. You can find all that stuff on that yellow jacket wall at Master. Check out master.ca. This podcast is sponsored by Cintas, and they are providers of blue collar uniforms to the blue collar trade. So if you're looking to switch up suppliers, just switch it up a little bit and check out some different options. Cintas has a bunch of different options available for you to check out. So check out our landing page, guys. It's cintas.com/HVAC Know-It-All.
Welcome to the HVAC Know-It-All Podcast. Recorded from a basement somewhere in Toronto, Canada. Your host and HVAC tech, Gary McCready, will take you on a deep dive into the industry, discussing all things HVAC. From storytelling to technical discussion. Enjoy the show.
All right, Don, welcome back. I mean, the last time we talked, you were in a different position with a different company. You've moved on to a different role with a different company, and it's still beneficial to this audience, which is amazing, because we want to talk about some A2Ls and maybe throwing some information around the whole flammable refrigerant sort of conversation, because there's a lot of people that are confused. There's a lot of people that sort of mock the A2L, saying, oh, they're not that flammable. There's some people that say they're highly flammable. There's a lot of controversy. There's a lot of polarization around the subject. So maybe we can clear a lot of that up with you today. What do you think?
Yeah, no, that's great. I appreciate you having me, Gary. It's been a while. So yeah, thanks for having me back.
Not a problem. So where would you start? Like, let's define an A2L first of all.
Okay, so an A2L, first of all, the number and letter, and I'm sure a lot of people have heard, we teach it all the time, so I tend to think that everybody knows about it, but you mentioned the company prior. I was at Emerson for almost 6 years, and I took that on almost immediately when I walked in the door with all the refrigerants, not just A2Ls, but hydrocarbons, CO2, yada, yada, yada. So we've been talking about it. Now, at least in the U.S., it's at our doorstep, and now we're kind of at the 11th hour. So A2Ls, the A is comes from the ASHRAE 34, standard 34, pardon me. The letter is for the toxicity, A, no or low toxicity, and then you got the number 2. And then when they came up with this new kit on the block, if you will, they added the L, which has to do with the velocity. So it's closer to an A1, for example, R22 410A, than it is an A2, and absolutely different than an A3. I think one of the biggest misconceptions that I was hit with when I came here right away is, and I think we're starting to do a better job of telling it, at least the instructors and educators like yourself are doing, is, first of all, there is no propane or butane in the A2L refrigerants. That's a big one. Okay. And I'm not sure where that misconception started out.
Okay.
But there is no I can't say hydrocarbons, because if you really get down in the weeds, there are technically hydrocarbons in it, but it's not the hydrocarbons as we think about it as far as propane. It gets in the weeds with chemistry. But anyways.
Gotcha. Okay. So that was a nice breakdown of the A2 and the L. So, I mean, what is there any training out right now that you know of? Like, does your company provide training on what we kind of need to know about working with A2Ls?
Yes. Yeah. In fact, that's why I was asked to come on board. They started an educational services similar to what we had at Copeland or Emerson. And so they were already doing some training, but as you know, and obviously they could see that with this change in the industry, that there was going to be all hands on deck. So the sales team and the chemical engineers and the marketing people weren't going to be able to do it all. So I've kind of helped come in and start to establish like decks, if you will, whether it be 2, 4, or 8 hour training. Now, we're not the only kid on the block. We're not the only, you know, game in town. You always have ESCO. You have ACCA, RSES. And I started naming names, which I normally don't like to do because inevitably I'll forget somebody, but there's a lot of resources. Of course, yourself, HVAC School Podcast, and many, many more. There's so many people out there doing a good job of training with A2Ls right now. It's for me, it's not that I invented it, but if you started teaching it as long as we were at Emerson like 6 years ago, and it started out with like a little 15-minute section, maybe of a 3-day tear down course, and turned into like a 45-minute discussion, then an hour and 15 minutes. It's, you can see people starting to gravitate towards it the last year or two I was at Emerson. And now it's, you know, yeah, my dance card is full. So
mm-hmm. We're all used to working with like 410A or 22 back in the day, and some other refrigerants that didn't have the A2L label attached to it. So what sort of different methods or precautions are we taking with an A2L as opposed to working with a 410A, for example?
So that's a great question. And surprisingly, as I always say, and I will this week, we've got 3 classes in a row, Dayton, Ohio, Indianapolis, and they're very large classes. These classes are turning up almost a 200 in one day and over 200 the following day and yada, yada, yada. But here's the thing about it is, I always jokingly say, or semi-jokingly say, if you're expecting a big wow factor, you're probably going to be disappointed, because really a lot of this stuff, Gary, is what you and I and all of us should have already been doing. A lot of it gets back to good practices. You cut open a line to do some repairs of some sort. We were always supposed to purge the line with nitrogen to get any residual refrigerant out. Now that's going to be required. It's all going to be documented. You're going to see in the near future, the OEMs will have these decals either already inside the door of the AC unit or heat pump outside, or in a packet that you'll install. You'll start to document that, at least in the U.S. under the AIM Act. You'll document what you had the pressure at when you pressurized the line and those kind of things, what the charge was, the dates, obviously, who did it and those kind of things, because that will be moving forward, will be required on that kind of stuff. So as far as hand tools, same as it's always been, there's nothing really jumping out. The tank design's a little different on the A2Ls, if you haven't heard. We're going to a left-handed threads. The tanks, we're getting away from colors, first of all refrigerants, even the A1s, they're going to an off gray. The tanks, at least in the U.S., and the tanks for the A2Ls will have a red stripe around them. And they'll have a left-handed thread on the A2Ls. They'll also have a different safety feature on the tank. You know, in the past, we've always had a ruptured disc. The way a ruptured disc works, gets too hot in the van. I hate to throw temperatures out there because it's based on pressure, and obviously all refrigerants are going to have a different pressure temperature. But yeah, let's say it gets 140 degrees in the van, Gary, for the sake of not arguing. It's designed to blow that whole charge so it doesn't, something catastrophic doesn't happen, you know? So that's the way that works. Moving forward, we're going to have a relief valve type, and it's going to relieve just enough refrigerant off the tank to take it out of, I don't know if you want to say danger zone, but remove that just off the pressure and relieve it, and then shut down. Even though we spend most of the class telling you how to remove the fear mongering, if you will, of the A2Ls, that you're not, you know, they're nothing like what you're cooking your steaks out in your backyard like, but you know, there's still going to be safety nets in. The biggest thing for me, with the exception of the tank, was where it starts all out. You know, the refrigerant manufacturers like Chemours and like our competitors, Okay. Then it moves on to the OEMs. And then what you're going to see is your safety, your sensors at the very minimum of a mitigation two is where it'll start out, where you have to have something, some type of mitigation. It'll be some type of sensor around the coil. And that's going to depend on which way the air is moving. Is it an air handler or is it a furnace? In some cases, if you have to move that horizontally, you'll have to take that clip off there and move it maybe to the other side of the coil. But that's depending on who the OEMs, I can't speak for all of them, even though we've worked with all of them behind the scenes. Most of them are going to be a separate board outside the main board, and that sensor will come into side. Will connect right into that with a Molex plug going in the main board. There are others that are going to go with it built right into the board itself. Okay. And the way that sensor is going to work at the very minimum mitigation two is once it senses above 20% of refrigerant versus air in that air, unlike smoke detectors where we shut the fan off, we're going to turn the fan on. We're going to try to bring more fresh air in and clean that out of that area to make sure it's not a nuisance call of any sort. Okay. Now, if that happens three times, it's going to shut itself down. Gotcha. All right. And a lot of different bells and whistles go off and I'll stop there.
Okay. So I want to tackle the left-handed thread thing because I was sent a sample of a hose, a charging hose and an adapter for a charging hose from Yellow Jacket that had left-handed threads on them. And I made a post about it because in the literature from Yellow Jacket, it was saying there's certain refrigerant cylinders that are going to be going to left-handed thread. Now, when I posted about that, a lot of people were upset saying, oh no, I got to buy more tools, but it's just one hose or one adapter when it comes down to it. And it's only for the connection. It's only for the connection at the tank. So what is the thought process behind the left-handed thread?
That is such a good question. You know what's funny about that is I was on the call when I first got here, let's say within the first month, and as a contractor I've been in the industry 31 years, 24 years in a truck, I thought, man, somebody wasn't really thinking there. But after I started to see all the different things that are parts of this, it all stems from liability.
I mean, yesterday I was playing with my torches and my acetylene is left-handed thread. There's a lot of left-handed threads out there when it comes to sort of flammable gases and stuff, right? Already. So, I mean, it's not like it's new. It's just a concept that they're moving into the A2L tanks, right?
Yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, something we commonly talk about in class is the automobile industry. Automobile, and 9 out of every 10 cars today is using A2Ls, 1234YF, which is a Chemours product, by the way. It replaced 134A. It's identical on the PT chart. The GWP is less than 4 compared to 1430. The point I'm trying to make is they're way ahead of us in the auto industry. Why is that? Because they've been making cars with gasoline in them for years. You know, if you brought that idea up nowadays, people would look at you like you're crazy. I mean, the auto industry is already adapted for at least 7 years now, 7 or 8. So it's all around us, and it's a good point on the left-hand threads. You're going to see that. With those kind of things. It's in the world we live today, it's all about liability, you know, it's about safety and what have you. We're just trying to, I mean, that's the reason we didn't go to R32 a lot in the US at first when other countries did, you know, we put that R125 in there. It's a fire deterrent, keeps the R32 discharge line cool, but you know, it's always been that way. It's just another thing that we're a tough industry. You know, I know you get up and shovel snow your whole life to get to your truck. I know I did. We can do this. It's not that big a deal. It really isn't.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we talked about purging nitrogen. It seems like a no brainer, but for those that don't understand the concept of purging nitrogen, we're just going to take a non-reactive gas, purge it through the lines that's non-flammable to remove any sort of danger whatsoever. But besides that, is there any sort of precautions we should be taking using fans or anything like that? Like what are your thoughts on continuing to change the practices to be safer? Is there anything that you can throw in on top of the nitrogen purge?
Yeah, I think just like with propane, you know, a lot of training out there, they like to tape off or cone off a work area of about 10 foot and have their sensor, their refrigerant sniffer out there the whole time while they're working. I think personally, it's not required right now, but I think a sensor in the work area, anytime you're in confined space, I mean, even CO2, Gary, we taught, you know, in a 15,000 parts per million can asphyxiate you. You got to have some type of ventilation. So everything, it's going to be, you know, someone taking the time to, the first line I have, the first bullet point I have in the safety area is, you know, evaluate the work area. And that's, you know, we always do that. Evaluate the work area. What is that? What does that look like? Where could we get in trouble at? Pinch points, those kind of things. When it comes to things in that work area, nothing like we thought at the beginning is really required at this point. For example, you're still going to be allowed to have your recovery machine inside that work area. Okay. You want to check with the manufacturer to make sure that two years ago, the model still applies for A2L approved. They don't make new recovery machines every year. It's not like cars. So what you're going to find is the newer, everything that's been sold over the last 2 years all says A2L rated. But go to the website of the manufacturer, mm-hmm. look and see. It's probably, the model number is probably already approved. The only exception to that rule, Gary, will be if you're working with a very large chiller of some sort. Those recovery machines are larger, have a better possibility of starting like an MIE or ignition type. So those are going to be required to be 20 foot outside the work zone. But other than that, there's not a lot of things. Going back to the tank, that safety feature I was telling you about, that relief valve, it's going to be more like a propane tank. So you're not, it's very rigid. In other words, you're not going to be able to puncture that out or take that out like we did with the ruptured disc. You'll want to puncture that on the side, at least under the AIM Act, the way we're doing here in the AHRI things, circle that with a black marker and then write empty on it. The device you use should be a non-sparking device. Brass tools, you'll probably see, just like the hose you were sent from Yellow Jacket, you'll probably start to see those little devices out there also. Just good practices and just minor changes when it comes to those things, though, as far as what I'm seeing. If someone else knows something, please share, but I'm just not seeing a lot of big changes right now, except the safety features that's going to be in the equipment, the tank. And then moving forward, really what it comes down to when it gets to you and I, or you specifically now, inside your truck, it's just going to be do the right thing. If you've already been, using vacuum pumps and those kind of things, and purging lines with nitrogen to remove refrigerant, it's going to be everyday business. It's getting back to the basics. That's all it is.
Okay. I mean, so there's really nothing to be that concerned about as far as our day-to-day work and the tools we use for the most part. So the next question I wanted to ask you is, like, what about charging limits? Like right now, what is the equipment that are using A2L refrigerants? What is the maximum amount of an A2L they're allowed to charge in a system right now at the moment?
If you're going into the winter and where you are, it's busy in the winter, like where I am, I mean, October, November, December are usually quite busy. All the heating startups and all the heat that's breaking down or not working, it takes us well into December for sure. If you guys need some help, skilled or just a helping hand, check out Wise Hire if you're having trouble finding that skilled or helping hand that you need. Check out wisehire.com, guys, if you haven't tried them already. Chirp lets you stay in touch with your customers through the year in an automated way, so you don't have to always be picking up the phone and remembering to text or call your customers to follow up on appointments or maintenances or anything like that. There's a story that one contractor told actually through Chirp that kept him busy in the shoulder season just by using the automated Chirp and following up with people and saying, hey, let's get some stuff done in the off season that we need to clear up some problematic things that have been lingering, so on and so forth. And this is the way you do it, by staying in touch with your customer base. And Chirp lets you do that in an automated way. Check out chirp.com. So after five, almost 6 months of using the Ambro Controls Oxyset, listen, I am sold on the thing. Lightweight, easy to use. It's lasting quite a bit on residential installs, light commercial repairs, and I love it. There's a backpack coming out that makes it easier to carry, and there's also the Precision torch tip that they came out with, which is a smaller torch tip for like hard to get smaller places. So check out the Ambro Controls Oxyset, guys.
On residential, what it comes down to, Gary, it really isn't so much the maximum. I think there's a 3.9 Anything below 3.9, I believe, is a mitigation one, but it really has to do with the square footage and the LFL multiplier. The way it's set up with the AIM Act right now, the amount of refrigerant you're allowed per square footage, it would almost be in, it would really, you'd really, really have to be almost in a closet to make that happen. I don't know that number off the top of my head. I could pull the slide up, but it, you know, it's really going to, it's a two process. It's going to be the charge size and the square footage, the room time multiplied by the LFL. On the larger charges, they're going to, you're going to see not so much in residential, but larger and larger systems. You'll see not just the sensor, Gary, you'll probably see, more than likely see, not probably, like a solenoid pump down type application where you'll move the refrigerant outside on your larger commercial applications and those industrial type stuff. You'll move it outside the condenser. There'll be other mitigations. When it comes to storage, for example, it's pretty much the same as it was with A1s. There are some exceptions. That area of the flammable refrigerants is actually getting larger, because in the past it had always been focused on like A3 or acetylene and those kind of things. Now it's going to include A2L. So the square footage has actually gotten larger. But if you go to AHRI or just Google AHRI PDF storage, you'll see all that information in there. They got a nice PDF in there. I started to say something else about that too, and I forgot what I was going to say. It was back on what you said about the charge size. If you want to go to 15.0, that will show you the EPA's 15.0, the ASHRAE 15.0, that will show you A2Ls in commercial applications. The 15.2 will be your applications in your residential A2L stuff. And it's a tough read. There's a lot of addendums on it. I mean, I shouldn't say a tough read. If you know what you're looking for, you go to that addendum A, B, C, D, whatever you're looking for, and it'll pull it up and you'll read exactly what is in. I think the biggest topic right now for us, at least what I'm seeing in the residential side of things, because that's what we're getting hit with first for the most part, is, you know, are we going to be able to use old line sets and those kind of things? You know, those are the kind of questions that are commonly coming up right now for us. And POE oil and what's the pressures and temperatures look like and those kind of things.
Yeah. Yeah. I've yet to work on an A2L myself. So it's going to be interesting to kind of, yeah, get gauges on it, look at how it's running, pressures, temperatures, all that kind of stuff. And that's going to be an interesting take for all of us that haven't experienced it yet. But what do you know about leak detection as far as the leak detector? Because I mean, there are, like, for instance, I have like I've got an Inficon DTEC Stratus that has an interchangeable sensor where we can go to sensing out hydrocarbons, for instance. But as far as leak detection goes, can a regular leak detector that we just buy randomly off the shelf without changing the sensor, can it pick up these A2L refrigerants, as far as you know?
That's a good question. And I don't know if I have a good answer for you. Here's what I do know, Gary. You take, for example, this is the way I've been handling it in class, along with others internally. Eventually the leak detectors, like digital gauges, they're mostly apps and Bluetooth, and they'll pop up on your apps and what have you. Compound gauges, obviously, are going to need to be changed and that kind of thing. But back to sensors and stuff like that, here's my thinking on this. Right now, until they get incorporated in it, you have most of these A2Ls that I'm familiar with are already refrigerants that's out there. So basically, you know, your 410A, like every OEM, at least that I know of, with the exception of one, is going with R454B. And what is R454B? That, again, that's a shameless plug, but it's a Chemours product also. And it's R32. Instead of being 50%, it's moving up to 68%. What's the other part of that? The 30-some percent it's making up for that R125 that had all the damage to it, the high GWP. It's good old 1234YF, which is in all your automobiles, less than 4. So those refrigerants are already out there. So they should be able to pick those sensors up. As far as, you know, I don't know if I'm a sensor expert or a sniffer expert on those kind of things, but that's what I know for sure. I'm actually teaming up with Field Piece this week, and we're doing a 4-hour training, me 2 hours and them 2 hours. I really want to get with people like those type of tools and things like that and do some cross training with each other, because those are important questions to answer for them. Right now, I'm being told they will, but I haven't actually sat down with someone from that part of the industry and talked to them about it as far as what their tools are capable of doing.
Yeah, I mean, well, it makes a lot of sense if we're using refrigerants that have already been used and sniffed out with a regular leak detector. It makes a lot of sense that our leak detectors that we currently have, without switching to a hydrocarbon sensor, will pick them up. So, I mean, it's still some good information here. So, I mean, we've talked about a bunch of stuff here, and this is the way the industry is going. Do you see that the future of refrigerants being all A2Ls? Do you see us stepping back from flammable at some point? Like, where do you see the future of refrigerants going when it comes to these mildly flammable A2Ls, or in air quotes, mildly flammable A2Ls?
Well, I personally, with the Don Gillis hat on, or even Chemours, if you will, it's not just our industry they're picking on. Okay. I always explain that to everyone, that people are bitter. Oh, it's a money grab and what have you. To each their own. And I don't get involved in those conversations. It comes down to chemicals, whether it's a fire deterrent, you know, foaming agents, some kind of solvents, repellents, those kind of things. Where do I see that going? Anything with high GWP is going to be moved out of the way, going increasingly in demand for the earth. Like it or not, I don't get into the politics end of it. It's the same thing as we did with the ozone depletion. Again, that wasn't picking on our industry. I remember my mom with her beehive in the bathroom, getting ready to go out with dad with a big can of Aquanet spraying her hair. You know, I mean, we don't see things like that anymore. And that's just the world. You EV cars, it's all going in the same. It's all about emissions. So as far as A2L refrigerants, will they be taking everything over? Not necessarily. I think one size doesn't fit all. I think there's a place for everything. Here's what I do know. The smaller the charge, the more higher GWP you'll be allotted. You get into grocery stores as it sits today, 300, 400 foot line sets, you know, large charges like that, you're going to have the less opportunity you're going to have GWP. That's why you see a lot of folks going to CO2 and those kind of things. But then, you know, and then you also see a lot of A1 systems, 404A, for example, being retrofitted, because not everybody can afford to go out and tear everything out and start with a CO2 or want to necessarily. So you have refrigerants like R-448A, 449A, those kind of things are A1 classification, but they're a lower GWP. And that threshold is a little higher number because they're grandfathered in pretty much because the system's already set in there. For sure, I think it's safe to say that you're seeing something start out right now. You're at the beginning of something that's not going to, once the genie's out of the bottle, it's not turning back. There's no doubt in my mind. I mean, Asia and all of them have been way ahead of us for 7 years now, if not eight. Everything we've been buying with window units or PTEC units or dehumidifier, a lot of that manufacture doesn't get made, at least in the U.S. I can't speak for Canada. A lot of it's Asian driven, and they're ahead of us with R32. And a lot of people don't realize it. 5-6 years ago when I was teaching, if you don't know, it's already in your PTEC units. There's nothing to fear here. You know what I mean? It's in window units. It's in dehumidifiers. So I don't see us. I think once the equipment starts to hit the ground, Gary, and you and I, or you and other technicians start to get your hands on it, you're going, wow, this is not that difficult. You know what I mean? This isn't near what we thought we were expecting. I remember R22 to 410A. I remember freaking out about those pressures. I mean, it's like it was yesterday. We took the little test. It wasn't even included in your EPA at the time for us anyways. And it was like, man, I'm not putting that stuff in my truck. I don't see that. The difference here for me, Gary, is this is how I see it, is that runway is a lot shorter. You know what I mean? We're getting there much quicker on a smaller time frame. That's the big difference. It's coming at us right now, real quick. We better be ready.
Yeah. Okay. So let me take it away from A2Ls for 1 minute. And I want to close it off with this, because there's a lot of people concerned or asking or interested in what's going on with 410A, because word on the street is it's going to be phased out very soon. And what do we do when we need some to repair or charge a 410A system that has lost its charge? What are your thoughts on 410A and the talk about it kind of phasing out over the next little while?
Yeah, so it's the first, I'm going to try to keep this as short. It's not a simple answer, and I don't mean this to make it difficult, but part of the AIM Act is for the United States anyways, and the Kigali Amendment internationally is to step down those refrigerants allocations. Think of it as a cap, right? So we already in the States stepped down 10% last year in 2022. If you don't know, shot the price of 410A. The less you make, the higher the price is going to be. It's just, it's the industry we've lived in our whole lives, just like R22, the same thing. I'm not saying it's right. Yep. It's just a fact. If you, you know, how much do old parts on cars cost that were made 40 years ago? It's, they don't make as many. So with that said, we're going to have another 30% reduction in allocations come 2024, January 1st of 2024. A lot of people don't realize that. That's going to be down 40% of what we were manufacturing in 2021. That's huge. So is the price going to go up? I would guess so. You know, I can't predict the future, but I would guess so. It is a phase down, but you're right. It's a pretty big phase down, not a phase out. So what's going to happen there, Gary, is we're going to have to decide. And when I say we're, I'm talking about manufacturers of refrigerants, not only us, but our competitors and solvents, chemicals in general. Okay. They're going to have to decide we're only allowed to fill our 5-gallon bucket up with so much product to sell, to manufacture, to fill the needs of everybody in the world. Now, do we want to put little one by one inch blocks in there that don't take up as much of space? Or do we want to put in 3 by 3 inch blocks in there and dump them in our bucket that'll take up the space pretty quick? That's what's going to happen. 404A has a GWP of 4,000. That's already being phased out everywhere. You know, California is banning it. Europe did it a long time ago. They're charging you by the metric tons. You're getting penalized for the higher GWP. 410A is 2,088 compared to 454B, which is 446 or 466, pardon me, somewhere there about 446. Okay. So what are you going to make more of? That's and the problem with 410A right now, from what I understand, I work with chemical engineers quite a bit, is there's no substitute for 410A because they don't have enough atoms on the face of the earth to make a drop in replacement that is classified A1. Okay. They can't find the GWPs to replace it, to replace it. So that's a tough one. So my easy answer for this, Gary, is, and hopefully everybody understands this, is the third part of the AIM Act has to do with reclamation, recovering refrigerant. Recovered refrigerant is going to be in high demand. Okay. The recovered refrigerant will be taking the place from 2024 to 2029. We're going to have to use reclamation as a big factor to substitute for virgin refrigerants. It's the only way around it. There's no other way around it. You know, I've been to a lot of training classes with ballrooms filled, convention centers, and I'm hearing everybody tell their customers, look, if you want these orders, get them in early for 2024. That's the problem there. If you don't know how to recover refrigerant, or you've never recovered refrigerant, first of all, go to training, get some training about it, watch Gary's training, whatever it takes. Learn how to do it. But reclamation, recovered refrigerant, reclaimed refrigerant is going to play a big role in keeping these systems running out there.
So right after I recorded this, I said, I got to call this podcast the Dawn of A2Ls. Pun intended. So anyway, thank you, Dawn, very much for getting on here and taking your time to educate us further on A2Ls and refrigerants in general. Happy HVACing. I'm out.
Hope you enjoyed the show. Follow HVAC Know-It-All on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, TikTok, Twitter, LinkedIn, and anywhere else Gary feels like popping up. This has been a Two Smokes and a Coffee production.